Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
This is Charlton Live. Charlton Live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. This is the big match preview. We are in the home straight, it would appear. The takeover, according to Rick Everett, is a done deal. And we hope to find out maybe within the next few days that is the case and that Rick hasn't got it wrong. But I don't think he will have because that is very unlikely. Good evening. Welcome to Charlton Live. My name is Louis Mendes. Joining me in the studio here at the Valley is Mr. Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Good day.
Good day to you.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
That'd be embarrassing
if it turns out not to be the Australians after that.
I'm glad the impression was obvious enough as Australian.
Yeah, what sort of mood would you say you're in today?
Buoyant. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I'm in the camp that says it's done, dusted, happy. Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm confident.
Joining the pair of us here at the Valley to discuss today's happenings is Mr. Nathan Malloy. Doing, Nath?
Living the dream, mate.
You're living the dream?
Yeah, is this too quiet?
No, you're all right.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, I'm not too...
He's not as confident.
I am buoyant, but not as good. Buoyant as Mr. Bolin.
I've had a Lucozade, to be fair.
Oh, I've had a Red Bull. No pun.
Excellent. Right, on tonight's show, we are, of course, going to chat about the update that's come out today from Rick Everett that he believes that the takeover is a done deal here at the Valley. Unfortunately, therefore, we're not going to do Charlton Players as Biscuits as we had been promising. Regan Charles Cookie, Bob-N Reeves, Hobnabisar, Digest Steve Brown. Right, that's out of the window. We're going to hear from Carl Robinson. He had a few words to say about Richard Murray's update about the takeover last night. He's also, as we go on past the takeover, we will talk about football as well. Steffi Mavadidi's injuries, Josh McGuinness's performances during the week, and of course look ahead to Saturday's game up at Doncaster as well. But the main news today is that Rick Everett has tweeted that he believes the takeover here at the Valley is a done deal. He said that he believed the price is around £45 million, which is outrageous when you think that Roland bought the club for, I think, about £18 million, something along those lines. Although if you look at the money he's then put into the club, I think hopefully he's still making a loss overall, but we'll find out again as we go on. So that's what Rick has had to say. Tom, your initial reaction to the news? I mean, this could be huge news here at the Valley. It could be the end of really one of the most difficult periods in our history.
Yeah, and usually when I see it break and then you see all the speculation, I'm a little bit wary, but it feels different. It feels like, you know, with Rick tweeting things about imminent and things happening over the last few months, and then kind of as far as your average fan is concerned, nothing seems to be happening, or certainly it's moving very slowly. I don't think he would tweet something like done deal unless he was pretty confident. I mean, I'm sure there'll be a couple of things still to be ironed out and probably not expecting an official announcement for at least a few days. But if the price has been agreed, then that's probably the main sticking point. Like you say, obviously, I'm not trying to now nitpick and look for negatives, but if Roland's made any money out of this, I'd be fuming. But to be honest, look, let's just get rid of him. Let's just get it done, forget about that, and try and move on.
I mean with the price quoted there from Rick Everett, which he said £45 million, and what we don't know is how that deal's structured. You know, it could easily be that you get £25 million up front and you get another whatever when we get to the Premier League or something like that. It could be all up front, we don't know. Also, I mean, that you're right in saying that I think he's pumped in a bit more than that, and so this would effectively be in someone else is paying for his mistakes in the main, but he still lost a little bit. But I mean, Nathan, where were you when you heard the news? What's your initial reaction to it?
I was on the train. Was it on the train? I can't remember.
That's not important. Just
yeah, no, yeah. Again, you know, it's great. It's great news, but it seems more promising than it has been. But I won't crack open the tequila yet, though. But even though it's probably the end is near, I think. I hope. I'll wait.
I think the price as well suggests, because a lot of people are worried about is he going to keep parts of the club in terms of the training ground and the stadium and stuff. You expect that value that's not going to be the case, which obviously as fans we want to hear anyway. But as we said, the majority, I know he spent a fair amount on transfer fees perhaps at the start, but or certainly over inflated wages. But
wasted, I think.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of his money has gone on the training ground as well. So you'd hope that price includes that. Certainly if the investors coming in have got any sense.
Now, I spoke to Rick earlier on. He wasn't available to come onto the show, but I did ask him, and he sort of said he obviously didn't expect an announcement today, which I had confirmed elsewhere as well. He said his understanding is there, the agreement is there. He's put this on the message boards as well, so it's not like I'm breaking any confidences here. But his understanding is it's the price is agreed. That part of the deal is done. There's just one or two little things that need to go through, as you said, Tom, some sort of process. But he said he didn't know exactly what it is, but he said he had a very good source, and he couldn't really say much more than that. So that's what we're expecting. But he also said he wasn't 100% certain who the owners are going to be. Now, he tweeted a few days ago, I think, that to put your money on the Australians. I think Rich Corley put today something about Australians as well. So that seems to be it. I mean, that's what you're expecting, whether it's an Australian backer with British people here in the country to deal with it. That's one thing that's possible. Could be a fully Australian consortium that we don't know the full details of. So I mean, that is one of the weirder things about this, is we're now so close, but we still don't know exactly who it's going to be and who's going to take over the club. And I guess in a way we are sort of taking another step into the darkness in that case.
I mean whoever takes it over, obviously none of us know. It's the joy of surprises, I suppose. But for me, the main thing is having a CEO or a figurehead of some sort who knows football, for one. And if they're any sort of... if they're child-related, even better. But the main thing, is that they know football. Because I think over the past few years of the people that have been in charge, it's obviously not proved to be very successful, understatement of the year. But, yeah, that's my main concern. And I suppose we'll just wait and see who these people are, or person. I don't know who it is. But, yeah, it is exciting. But for me, it's just making sure we get the right structure in place. I'd look forward to seeing a few fans, or many, many fans coming back, because that would be nice to see.
One of the things that Rick has tweeted about as well, on one of the forums, which is something that a lot of us know, you've heard about over the years, is there are some former directors who have loans within the club. I think they come to about £7 million. And any sort of takeover, how those loans would be dealt with, again, without knowing the full ins and outs, how that could be dealt with, Rick says that could possibly be the thing that's holding it up. Freddie's tweeted in another guest as well. He said that the famous EFL fit and proper test might still need to be done. He said he believed that held up the Oldham takeover and possibly the Wigan one as well. So I mean, he says I think saying the next few days is a bit optimistic, but you know, like I say, Rick, and I've spoke to people and just try and find out a little bit more from people who might know a little bit more, and you know, the next few days may not be optimistic, which is what we're hoping. But I mean, the EFL fit and proper test is obviously something that we're hoping is going to be a bit more rigorous this time.
I was going to say, if you're not in jail, you're pretty much past it, don't you? I think you don't have to. It seems pretty easy to get through, and we've seen owners far worse than Roland in terms of their history and their dealings get through that. So yeah, on the one hand, I think it's not going to be difficult for them to fail. On the other hand, it perhaps isn't that much of an indicator of who the person is. But I only echo what Nath said, really, that you know, our concern is that they have football and Charlton at the forefront of their planning, and they take us seriously and realise the potential in the club. And you know, you've got to be an owner of a football club, really, as a custodian. You know, you do put a lot of money into it, but at the end of the day, your investment, perhaps you're not going to see that much from, but it's the chance to get us back to where we belong, which is probably Championship at minimum.
Yeah. Nathan, what do you think about the fact that someone is willing to pay £45 million for Charlton now? Because do you think Aston Villa, when they got sold to the Doctor a couple of years ago, I think I vaguely remember that being about £40 million, and that was a team that just come out of the Premier League. Now, I mean, £45 million seems like an obscenely high amount for Charlton. Now, you know, like I say, it probably is a case of Roland put this money into the club as a loan as such, and I think he was hoping for some sort of return on that. Obviously, if he has made a loss still, but less of a loss if he gets a big asking price now. So you're looking at someone who's happy to pay that sort of money for this club, whether it be upfront or in a structured deal, which we don't know yet. Well, I mean, what does that say about their aims for the club and, you know, how deep their pocket is? I mean, is that something that, you know, I guess there's two schools of thought. You think they've got more money than sense, or is one thing. Well, the other hope is they have a lot of sense. They just so happen to have a lot of money as well, so they don't mind spending it.
Yeah, no, exactly, both. I don't know, I think Wolves went for something similar as well. So, obviously, two things strike me is, firstly, that Roland's quite a shrewd businessman if he's got £45 million, if that is what it is. And then, yeah, like you say about the owners, they must have some sort of fluidity in terms of cash, because obviously without knowing the full details of how much up front, etc., etc., like you say, to spend £45 million on a, you know, a decent League One club at the moment, but the potential's there, which I think a lot of that value is probably on potential and the training ground and the ground, etc. It must, you know, I can't think it's not going to be your Joe Bloggs down the road, is it? So I think they're going to have big pockets, but I'm not expecting like a Man City sort of person. No. Well, we can hope, but I don't know. But hopefully, when the details come out, we'll obviously know more about it, who the person is and what his background was, etc., etc.
I mean, Tom, when you look at any new owner coming in, if you had to set him a few, you know, short term targets, so let's say for the rest of this season now, we know that the transfer window is closed. There's nothing much we can do on that unless there's free agents that we want to pick up. So we know what that is. I mean, what would you hope from a new owner between now and the end of the season? They'll look at the manager, who's been linked with Barnsley in the Mirror this evening, which is quite interesting, which we'll come on to later. They'll look at that. They'll look at the fans' relationships. They'll look at the fact there is a squad that's probably going to challenge for the playoff this year, we hope as well. I mean, what do you hope that whoever it is can achieve within the next 3 or 4 months in terms of quick wins?
I think there are some quick wins in there. I think, yeah, first and foremost, it's stability. That obviously in the form of the manager. As you say, he has been linked away, but for me, he remains the right man for the job and should certainly stay through to the summer and see this project through. There's also the fans, and there again are quick wins to get them back. I mean, obviously Football for a Fiver coming up, if this was to go through before that would be amazing, but there are other ways that they can try and entice fans back for the remainder of the season, things they can do with the season ticket deals next year, that kind of stuff. And then also, again, not necessarily a quick win, but something they need to do straight away is start to look to the summer, because, as we said last week, the transfers or the loanees that we've got are all going to go, and we're going to have to rebuild in the summer. So give Carl his budget now, start to identify players and let us know what we can do, so that in the summer, the longer term strategies of buying players, finishing the training ground and all those longer term projects can get underway, rather than kind of being left just to sort of hang out to dry.
At the risk of putting a bit of a dampener on it, Nath. Now, obviously, this is something that Charlton fans have been building up for years now. This moment that's going to come up, hopefully within the next week or so. When it comes, I mean, there's going to be drinks down the roads of Denmark. There's going to be people going to the game all of a sudden you weren't going to go. Like I say, if it's in time for Football for a Fiver, that could be a special day in terms of attendance.
Nice, what, 1-0 loss?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's what I think. It was Gary Saunders who tweeted on Twitter earlier, said something along the lines of everyone's going to be there. It's going to be the best day ever until we lose 3-0 or something. I mean, in terms of the build-up that we're going to give this, it will be quite strange how after it happens, after the euphoria of when it happens, it will be pretty much just back down to earth and just back to the day-to-day running of a football club, I think. And I guess that's something that we have to prepare ourselves for. It's something we're really looking forward to, and hopefully over the next few years it's going to be something great. But it's not something that's going to turn around the fortune of the club in the space of 10 days. I mean, look at Leighton Orient. I was saying to someone the other day, you know, Leighton Orient's media strategy for when they got taken over was brilliant. Like, they started using the hashtag Our Club. Their new owner and their new director of football was straight on BBC Radio London speaking about it. Everyone was really happy. Then they started playing football, and it was dreadful. So, I mean, there is sort of, we have to be prepared for the euphoria is going to die down after this happens as well, and just be prepared to get back to normal and hope that we start steadily building up again.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think the euphoria is obviously going to take place because, obviously, of him going. And also the build-up of the work that a lot of people that have put into the Roland out and, you know, everything else. It's a big, big, massive weight off, I think, of a lot of people's shoulders. And, yeah, so you know, we'll have all have a little drink and a disco dance, whatever you want to call it, and then yeah, like
exactly
you said,
what Ronan would have wanted, honestly.
And then yeah, he's going to come crashing down to earth. As long as we're not expecting, yeah, we get new owners, so we're going to blooming sign, you know, who are all these free transfers and all these top players and that. We might do, but we do have to concentrate on getting out of this league, whether it's this year or next. And but it's the start of a new beginning. And I think that's what I think a lot of people are looking forward to, a clean slate.
Yeah, exactly that, Tom, I was going to say. I mean, the, you know, whereas, you know, it will be, almost be a case of overnight, all this bad feeling between supporters and what was then the club, the board, will go overnight. And therefore, I mean, the atmosphere around the place could be so different overnight in terms of, you know, people coming back who haven't been there. Now, whether we're getting our hopes up too much in terms of how many people will come back, I'm sure Football for a Fiver, like I say, if that's done in time, will help. But, you know, we will see some, you know, I'm sure we'll see a pick-up in the attendances. There'll be more old faces that you used to going with and seeing who start coming back. And it will start to feel, we will start to feel like Charlton again, which is something we haven't really felt like for a little while.
Yeah, and I, to be honest, I think with the squad we've got at the moment, I'm not sure how much the takeover is necessarily going to affect the players. It's not like we've got the Adaroviches and Yoni Bayuns and those sort of network players or anything. We've got a fairly good group who, under this regime, have been performing pretty well and seem pretty close-knit. So I can't see the takeover necessarily affecting them directly. Obviously, the impact of more fans and the atmosphere at games might well affect them, which is a result of the takeover. But yeah, I think the new owners, as and when they come in, there are quick wins they can do to get some fans back through the doors, but some fans are going to take more convincing. And it's, you know, there are routines that they've dropped out of for the last couple of years. And, you know, do they want to submit back to that routine of going to football every other Saturday? What are the prices like? That kind of stuff. So those things, they are going to take time. And it's a lot of work that Roland has kind of destroyed over the last few years for those people. I hope that they give the new owners a chance and try and come back, because we've seen what this place is like when it's full, and we know that we have a big fan base there just waiting for us to pick up again. But yeah, it's certainly not going to be easy for them.
Chrissy T tweeted in earlier on this afternoon saying he's keep the champagne on ice, chaps. He's looking forward to listening tomorrow morning on his commute in on South Eastern, so that'll be a long show. the good one from Colin Hart says, hurry up, Charlton Live, and start. This was obviously before the show. I need to hear voices, not looking at tweets and words. It's starting to feel like Christmas Eve as a kid again. Merry Christmas to you. That's from Colin. I mean, that is, like I say, I mean, as the anticipation is really building now. And I mean, I turned on notifications for when Charlton tweeted today, so every time Charlton tweeted, flashed up on my phone, and there was them Austin Powers memes and stuff. But it is something that certainly we're looking forward to. Now, Max St. John Brown said, I, for one, would love the buyers to be Red Bull, even though the crest would probably change and we'd be known as Charlton Red Bulls. Their history of taking over clubs speaks for itself. Whoever the buyer is, hopefully the crowds will grow and promotion is on the cards coming you Red. Now, I don't believe it's going to be the Red Bull. I mean, I could be proved wrong. I mean, there are a lot of fans who have things to say about badges and names changing. I'm not even sure if they'd be able to do that if you look what Hull City Tigers try to do. So we don't know. Now, Jamie Boxall, the Charlton YouTuber, says, is it within the realms of possibility, though, for the new owner to be even worse than our current one? Hashtag Mike Ashley.
Of course it is. I mean, anything's possible. But
this is Charlton we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But again, I think it'll all stem down to what I said earlier in terms of the structure they bring in. I mean, I think Roland came in with a plan, or with his plan anyway, and we sort of knew from the get-go it was never going to work with the players that we were getting. We had Turan turn up and whoever else we had, I can't remember. But yeah, so he's got a valid point. We could be celebrating for something that could be even worse, but I don't want to burst anyone's bubble. So it's possible, of course it is, but I don't think... I think people might have done a bit. I don't know. Maybe Murray's done a bit of homework on these ones. I don't know. Maybe, a lot of people just looked into it a little bit more, to see what they are, what their aims are to, not just to sort of farm players.
Yeah, Finchie said new owners have a wealth of people who are fans with experience to call on. They really should tap in to the expertise. And obviously, that was one of the main things that Roland and Katrine didn't do. They didn't call on the supporters who have been around the club. They didn't listen to supporters who worked within the club. And if you read the Voice of the Valley and got the hint I said about the Katrine's final goodbye trying to come out a few weeks ago, she tried to You know, brought disciplinary proceedings against Ollie Groom, the club journalist, who's a huge Charlton fan as well, always has been, used to be on this show as well, of course. Because from my understanding, is because he would sometimes say, "Oh, you know, you want to turn the home kit to white. I advise you don't do that." You know, they were literally not listening to the advice of Charlton people. And using that against them, and that's what it sounded like. So I'm sure CARD and Supporters Trust and fan groups of Belgium 20, they'd be willing to help any new owner to come in and settle down and get their feet under the table and learn what this club's all about.
Yeah, definitely. And they've got, like Nath said, they've got such a wealth of people they can call upon. Not just the protest groups, but just fans who come every week, fans who've stayed away, you know, make contact with them. Why are you staying away? What is it that you found so difficult over the last few years? All kinds of things like that. And you would think with Roland being as bad as he has been from that PR perspective and that engagement with the fans, it's such an easy thing for new owners to see. You know, why were fans unhappy? There it is. Let's do the opposite and let's try and get people back. And yeah, it remains to be seen exactly who these new owners are and where their priorities do lie. Obviously, we hope they're nowhere near what we've got at the moment. But if they've got anywhere close to Charlton or Charlton anywhere close to their heart, then that's what they do. And it will make their job so much easier because those people know the club and they're the people to call upon.
Keith Sell agrees with Finchie. He says, "You're not wrong. Charlton must be the most inventive, tenacious and absolutely loyal fans in the country. Just look at the history and it goes back way past the Valley Party and sell out to when the Glicksteins owned the club." I mean, we've got history. I know we've seen the protests that we've seen over the last few weeks, that sort of fan power, we've seen it before with the Valley Party back in the day. You know, these Charlton fans come out for their club and they do what it takes for their club, and like I say, they'd be more than happy to help a new owner, and that's accept the help is what you need to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've been innovative in sort of all the protests. It's not just been a simple march, or you know, it's been very innovative. And but like you said, you know, you've got people like Rick, who's got a massive amount of experience from working at the club, and there's a lot of other people that have left the club that obviously they could call upon. And I think with Charlton fans, we don't actually ask for a lot. You know, we're not asking to be the Man United, Man Cities of the world. You know, we just want to properly run club, listen to the fans now and again. We know that, you know, we've got to have differences of opinion because, you know, that's just the way of the world. But I just think we just want to have a nice, respectable club, an honest club. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, that's what we get in the near future.
Will Bolin says that maybe the new owners want no future Roland payments or interaction and therefore are happy to pay more up front. I.e. we keep sell-on fees, no money to Roland on promotion, etc. And he says, "I'm liking the new owners more and more, even though we don't actually know who they are." That's a guess as such from Will. None of us really know the structure of the deal yet, or you know, if anyone does know that they're not in a position to share it yet, at least. So, like I said, these are all things that will probably come out in the wash in the next few days, weeks, months, whatever it takes. But you know, the last line there, I'm liking the new owners more and more. I mean, literally, the amount of points you win for turning up and not being Roland du Châtelet is outrageous. Really. I mean, it's such a clean sheet, and it's such a, you know, there's going to be such an outpouring of goodwill towards the new owner purely because they're not the last owner.
Yeah, definitely. And you see just things like today when Rick puts that tweet out, within 10 minutes you've got people, like you say, subscribing to notifications, you've got people furiously refreshing, there's gifts going everywhere of people dancing and celebrating, like the clamour there for him to just be gone and for the takeover, everyone's so desperate for it to happen. And yeah, so we're just clinging on to that now, and like he says, we're all just desperately hoping that this new owner is everything that we want. And like you say, if he can be as far or the further away from what Roland is, the better. And I think we're all kind of hoping, not necessarily guaranteeing, but we're all hoping that it is that, and that he's the complete antithesis. And someone we get is, you know, probably not a Charlton fan, but someone, as I say, who puts Charlton at the forefront of everything they do.
Now, last night, there was a fans forum meeting, and the club put out an update because Richard Murray, the director, attended the meeting and gave some updates on the takeover. So obviously, almost now, this is out of date. We were this morning, we were thinking we were leading the show with this, but it is almost out of date now. But there are certain things in there which provide good information, which is something that's been lacking horribly over the last 4 years. So on the takeover, Richard Murray revealed that he signed a non-disclosure agreement, so he can't, which means you can't say names, you can't reveal certain things. But he says so, and he says he's not in touch blow by blow on it, but he says as far as he knew, we still had two interested parties. But he believed that one was far closer to doing a deal because they're very close on the price of Rowland. Now, obviously, that adds up with what Rick has tweeted today with the information that's come out today. Richard Murray reiterated that he felt that February was the most likely month, which obviously he revealed to the Trust 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then reiterated to the club staff, I think it was last week. So that fits in again with what we already knew. He also mentioned that, you know, Charlton lose a substantial amount of money each month, as would any club. So it's in Rowland's interest to get the deal done as soon as possible. Now, he was asked about Rowland keeping hold of the ground or the training ground, which is something that people have worried about before, because, I mean, any separation of a club from its ground always seems to end in tears, doesn't it? Richard Murray said that, to his knowledge, the sale would be lock, stock and barrel. They wouldn't keep the training ground. He also mentioned that the community trust is the new they realise for a club that any deal involved, yeah, the community trust is very important as well. So sorry, that's what you said on that. And finally, he said would the new owners consider a move away from the Valley, and he says from the talks I've had, it's never been mentioned. So that's, I mean, that'll put a lot of people's mind to rest about the two main things about the club being sold lock, stock and barrel. So no deal that keeps the training ground under Duchatelet's ownership, or the ground under Duchatelet's ownership, and also that no new owner would want to move the club away from the Valley, because obviously the Valley is such a huge part of our history, possibly more so than most other clubs with their home grounds.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think even though the worry for me is not only, like you said, the financial sort of sense of, if he did keep the ground, would he's still lingering about, even though he's not there, he would still be part of us, even though tangibly isn't. So yeah, hopefully, you know, if he squashed those rumours, then that's grand, because I mean, for 45 million, I'd expect, then surely it's not just for the football side. But yeah, no, hopefully that all happens, and then we stay here for a long while, because I don't think we need to move. I think we've got a nice ground. I don't think going to a massive 60,000 seat stadium is going to be much use. I don't think we'll sell it out in League One. It's struggling to fill our one as it is. With those rumours quashed, it makes me feel definitely a little bit more comfortable.
Now, Peter Finch tweeted in that the first three songs on his radio show this evening was at 4 o'clock, was Into the Valley, London Calling and Mull of Kintyre. I know that because I saw he was going to play that, so I tuned in and listened. And I had a little smile on my face. I think he started his show by saying, I'm in a really good mood today because I'm a Charlton fan. Good day to be a Charlton fan. And I agree with you there, Finchie. Steve Mummery says, Rowland's tenure has been far from dull, and if the new owner is worse than him, then they would have to be a mass murderer. Bye, Rowley. Don't bother keeping in touch. And I think there'll be a fair few Charlton fans out there who feel the same. Malk Warden says, so happy that soon Rowland will be gone. I've already bought my ticket for the Shrewsbury game and planned at least 4 further games at the Valley to attend. That'll be the highest number since Rowland took over. And that's what we're seeing people coming back already. Now, Carl Robinson was asked briefly for his update on the takeover already. Didn't have too much to say, but I thought it's enough here to be worth listening to.
I've had 14 months of not really knowing what corner to turn. I've turned many corners and not knowing what's round the side of it, but we're here to talk football, and people above me will control it. I think we had a statement yesterday. I think Richard Murray met some fans last night. I think he was quite open and honest. I think he's been quite good for people, because I think now we've got a constant message. When you think now that's been three which he's been involved in since the turn of the new year, I think that's a lot more than what you've had before.
They needed that as well, didn't they?
Well, it's not for us to say it's right, wrong or indifferent, it's just how we feel it should be done. I think what we start getting is that people start understanding where, when and how a little bit more. It's not a case of telling everybody everything, because there's certain things in a football club you can't know because of confidentiality things, but there's certain things that I think are important that you do understand. And I think Richard's been excellent at that, being very constant in his messages, and I think fans appreciate it. Well, I hope they appreciate the honesty.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Little chip ball, looking for the runner, Fosu, who's onside. Fosu, edge of the penalty area. Can he get a shot away? He can, and it's the opening goal. Tariq Fosu sprung the offside trap, gets his second goal of the season, and Charlton's first of the evening, and they're 1-0 up here at the Banksia Stadium.
Welcome back. This is Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio on a day where some big news appears to be breaking here at the club. Rick Everett tweeting that he believes the takeover is pretty much, well, is a done deal here. So we're waited, all waiting with bated breath to find out who the new owner of Charlton Athletic Football Club is. And more importantly, when the old owner's gone and shut the door. I was kind of hoping that I'd turn up to the car park today and find like a locksmith changing the locks. But I don't know if that's how it works for football clubs. I know that happens when you sell a house. Now, interesting news that started breaking on the Mirror football website shortly before we came on air is that Barnsley, who obviously lost their manager to Leeds United, Heckenbottom, the other day, putting Carl Robinson, the Charlton manager, on their shortlist. Now, that, you know, you could put any, they could put you know, they could put Jose Mourinho on the shortlist if they want. Don't mean they're going to get him, but I mean, you know, throws a spanner into the works, perhaps. You know, with the potential takeover coming, would a new owner think, well, I want my own manager anyway? Would that make Carl think, well, what chance to get a job straight away here and not be out of work if a new owner doesn't want me?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what they're doing. I think they're dipping their toes in the water. I think, I just think, like, exactly like you said, it's a bit. You know, he doesn't know if he's coming or going yet. If they just put it out and if they leak something out, will he show an interest publicly? Don't know. But you know, he's Marmite. We all know that. I know there's a lot of people on Twitter that don't really warm to Carl, which is, you know, that's more they're entitled to have their view. But you know, he's young. He's been fairly successful. You know, at MK Dons and here, I think he's doing a good job. It's not like he's been relegated every year on year. So yeah, I think he will start getting sort of interest from elsewhere because he tries to play football in the right way sometimes. So I can't see it happening personally. Not that I know anything. I just don't think he'd leave unless he knows that he's not going to be here. I can see him wanting to stay. He's started building something. He's started to get a good squad. I don't think he'd want to leave, especially. I don't think that's nearer here. Where does he live? MK. I think that's London's nearer to MK than Barnsley, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, do you think he might be tempted by the move? It's a step up into the Championship that saves him after worrying about getting promoted into the Championship. Just go.
Yeah, I think the money will probably play a factor depending on what they're offering, but. Like Nath, I think the main issue is the owners. You know, if he's able to have a conversation with them, I doubt that can happen yet. But if he's able to say to them, look, where do I stand? Then we'll see. It'd be interesting. If the owners say, no, we want you to see this through, it'd be interesting where he sits then. Personally, I would, again, still want him to stay and certainly see it through. But you know, like with any of us, it's the same stuff we said about Ricky and we've said about lots of players over the years. If you're in any job and the chance to go elsewhere in a better job for more money comes up, chances are you're going to take it. As I say, I would hope he stays. But yeah, I mean, he's surely going to be tempted. He had a go at the Championship, obviously, before and didn't quite work out. I think Barnsley are down there, aren't they? So he might have another a tough second half of the season, whereas with us, he's got the chance, you know, potentially Wembley on the horizon and a promotion. So maybe take that into account. But like Nath, personally, I don't think he'll go. I think they're just using the takeover and the uncertainty as a chance to kind of list him.
Mm. On the Charlton Life Forum, CFGS says, if you don't have an interview with the new owner, then you have failed us.
Roland's under the table.
Yeah. I need to ask him. Phil says, by the way, Carl, take Jacko with you, and if we're in front with a few minutes left, bring him on as an extra defender, just a thought. I think looking ahead to possibly the game up at Doncaster. Right, so we've been through what we know so far about the takeover, what's been tweeted about it today. We'll keep looking at I'll keep Twitter open just in case it breaks while we're on air, but I think it's unlikely this evening. Now, there has been some other stuff around the club today, and the first thing is, of course, that we found out about Steffi Mavadidi's injury. He went off during the game against who was it, Oxford, of course, the other day. This is what Carl has to say. It's not great news.
We've put out today 8 weeks is a time scale in some ways, but when it's a tendon issue with the hamstring, I think sometimes there's not great evidence that can really support an exact date. Some will tell you 10 to 12, some will tell you 5 to 6, some will tell you let's go in the middle and go 8. So many different players will recover so much quicker. It's not the same injury, it's the same leg, but a different injury. So we'll just have to see how he recovers and be more about the boy's recovery rather than what some papers may tell you. There's still not perfect evidence to say when, where or how. Yeah, it's a bit of an acute one, a bit of a different one. But it's really weird since the turn of the year, we've had three or four injuries that I've only seen once in my career, very peculiar ones and different ones. I mean, our sports medicine science team have certainly done the same. So we've got to get to the bottom of it, because we've got to find something. And it's not as if training's changed, it's not as if anything's changed. But we've got to do something about it, because it can't carry on, really, the amount of injuries that we're having. Steph is maybe that he's not played much over this year, and maybe he's played because he's played so well, you want to keep him in the team. But sometimes you've got to be aware of that in some ways, that might be the case. But we're certainly digging into the data, and we're certainly seeing what we find is right or wrong. And we'll go from there.
Having been through it all before, he must be devastated.
Yeah, he is, yeah. But listen, I think what he went through last time was 10 times worse than what he's going through this time. So it's not like he's... And hopefully we'll certainly have him back for the last part of the season, which is the main part of the season. We've obviously got Sule, you've got Reezy, you've got Tariq, you've got Marshy, you've got Zorro, you've got Nicky Jose, and you've got Josh McGuinness. So we're still very, very loaded in that area, and you've still got like Rico, who we've kept behind, who we know can do a job in a number of positions. So it's not like we're overly worried about the players that we've got out. I can handle one or two. In the season, we had 6, 7, 8 out, so it's not that much of an issue, even though he's a top player and he's someone that we're going to miss.
That's Carl talking about Steffi Mavadidi there. So they put an estimate out of 8 weeks he's going to be out injured. Obviously, we lost him last season after just 5 games of his loan spell when he was on loan here from Arsenal, like he is this year, of course. Mm-hmm. So now he's got another, it's the same leg, same hamstring, but apparently a different part of it. I'm no doctor, so I don't really know what that means, but it says, potentially up to 8 weeks. So, you know, with the added spark we've been given since he's come into the club, I mean, that's just a big loss again. I mean, thankfully we've got Fosu at the moment and a couple of others who could play in that position, but such a shame, because Steffi's just really come into his own since he's rejoined us.
Yeah, it's disappointing, because if it is 8 weeks, that's obviously February and March out the window, and then obviously he's going to have to play a couple of development games to get him up to speed. But the only hindsight, or the only good thing I'm taking from it, is if it all does go to plan, he'll be back for the April games, which we spoke about last week. You know, we got all the top four,
Blackburn,
the top six,
in Portsmouth, there,
which could define whether we finish in that top six, and it's in our hands. So yeah, it's disappointing. But like you said, we've got Fosu there now, and obviously Reevesy and Kai Kai, so we've got options. But yeah, I mean, in the last few weeks, he was nominated for Player of the Month, wasn't he? So
yeah,
it just shows how great he's been since he's been back. And it's a shame, but it happens. He's got to roll his sleeve up, and someone else has got to take their chance.
Tom, Carl's been talking about, you know, the injury crises we've had this season. We haven't seemed to have much luck. I mean, he's saying they're going to try and get to the bottom of it and try and find out what's causing it. I mean, because when you're getting this many, I mean, there must be some sort of underlying cause. Is it players playing too much? Is there, you know, something, I don't know, something with a grass, I don't know, there's something going on, isn't there? There must be something.
A year or two ago, like, you laugh about the grass thing, but I remember Arsenal getting loads of injuries and them looking into the training facilities they had because it was happening. Like, it may even be a link, obviously, with this now because he's from Arsenal, but... Yeah, we have had a huge amount, and I think over recent seasons it's been down to the size of the squad, the amount of games that they have to play, but there must be something else that it's down to. I don't obviously know. We see the brief behind-the-scenes footage every week, but I don't know how hard Carl works them as well, and they obviously have to run a lot as players, so maybe that affects them, but... yeah, it's a concern, and it's something we need to look at. I don't think it can all just be down to bad luck, but... The good thing is, like Carl said, we, you know, yes, he's injured, but we've got other players that can play there, whereas earlier in the season we had six or seven out. So, you know, we've got Clarkey out and Mavadidi, but yeah, we've got Marshall, we've got Zyro, we've got Kaikai, we've got Reeves, we've got all these players that can do the job. Obviously, I'd love it if Mavadidi was in there as well, because I think he's been brilliant since he's come back, but at least we're a bit better stocked to cope with that loss now.
Okay, so disappointing by the sounds of it that Mavadidi is going to be out for possibly up to 8 weeks, possibly more, possibly less. We'll find out as time passes. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Life. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Catching sees, but Ormond Coffey's line, he's gone for it, you know.
Oh, what a goal!
By Amakachi!
Oh!
That's almost at the halfway line!
Unbelievable strike!
That is outrageous! Right footed! Well, he saw Ulmik off his line! What a goal!
Charlton Live.
As usual, an electric atmosphere in front of a packed valley for this always emotional derby. Charlton dominant from start to finish. Julian Speroni denying Zeng. Charlton were kept at bay until the hour mark, but that's when Matt Holland's free kick found Luke Varney to send the home fans into a frenzy. And with 4 minutes left, the night got even better as Varney broke clear to fire home a second and enter his name into the club's folklore.
We were there, takes us back to exactly 10 years ago today when Luke Varney's brace helped us beat Palace. Now, if you were just reminiscing there, good night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember we went out to Greenwich afterwards and we was doing shot games and then got my mate a shot of gin, which didn't go down too well. Literally. That's what I remember from the night, and then after that I can't remember it, but yeah, I remember Varney. Varney was one of my favourite players, actually.
Yeah, I used to like him.
He was a funny old player, wasn't he? Habit of missing a lot of chances, but he did score a few goals as well. But it's just, I was shocked when I saw that was exactly 10 years ago.
That's mad.
Yeah. So that means we've been out of the Premier League for much more than 10 years. Yeah. That's sad, isn't it?
Mm.
Hopefully the takeover will get us back there. Right, we had an email, a couple of emails actually that have come in. This one is from Dan, I think. David, sorry, this is from David Rodden. Says, hi amigos, thought I'd tip in a 4 or 2 on your man Robbo, and in particular his love of the 4-2-3-1. It seems to me there is nothing wrong with that formation. Many teams employ it now, but the issue for us is the way we operate it. The key figure in successful deployment of the middle three is the central man, the number 10 role. He needs to be the one who links with Kashi and the Forster Kaski base, and who receives the ball from the fullbacks in order to bring the wingers and central striker into play. We have two players who can do it, the injured Billy and the so far underwhelming Reeves. In their absence, Robley has regularly selected natural wingers to do the job, Fosu and Ricky, and they are not equipped for the task. And he goes, that's why I totally disagree with Nathan's support of Fosu in that role. Slagged you off.
I think Fosu could do a job there, but I still, yeah, Billy Clark's the best player in that position. I think Reeves, he drops too deep, but I think with the hand that we've dealt, I think put Fosu behind there.
Mm.
I just think, because because he can get the ball and just drive at people, and I think that's why.
Dave continues continues disagreeing with you. Says the winger's instinct is to put his head down and beat people, not to look to bring others into play. Seems a bit harsh for Robbo for criticising Fosu for not playing in teammates. In a sense, he's criticising Fosu for being Fosu, but him being in the wrong part of the pitch. Well, Robbo put in their solution. Yeah, I like this. It says, solution, I don't just bring problems, I bring solutions as well. It's probably to get Reeves in there and hope he plays himself into form. He said he's feeling a bit, he just finished it off saying he's feeling a bit sad. He's really going to miss the protest. Hope you will soon come a waltz in Matilda with me. Firm handshakes all around. And that's from DR. Thanks for that. That's a great email. It's always good to have Nathan's views challenged on the show because they're outrageous and wrong normally. So thanks for that. I had another message from Phil. This is just a quick one. Actually, saying, hi guys, with the club about to enter a new, hopefully exciting time under new owners, would it be a good time to look at safe standing in the lower north? I've been lucky enough to recently go to games in Germany and France, and the atmosphere created by young ultras behind the goal was amazing. The pre-match and half-time entertainment was also far better than anything I've witnessed here. Katrine was correct about creating a far better fan experience. However, she forgot about investing in the team and alienated fans. I'd never want to give the Nigels down the road much credit, but the ultras in the corner do create a good atmosphere. At recent times at the Valley, I've noticed far less young people, and they have to be energised and encouraged back to our clubs. There's disgust. That's Phil from Eltham. Interesting. I don't know exactly what the rules are now. I know that Shrewsbury have been talking about trialing safe standing behind the goal. Now, I don't know, from vague memory, I think there's some sort of difference between the Championship and League One in terms of standing. So, but I'm not certain the exact rules, because Brentford seem to still be getting away with it, and they've been in that league for a while now. But I mean, I'd certainly be up for a trial if we're allowed to have one.
Yeah, I seem to remember that you had to maybe apply. I'm like you, I think there was a rule about it at Championship and League One. I'm just trying to look now, but it probably won't load in time. But yeah, I'd consider it. I don't even necessarily think it's an age thing. I think that there will be enough people around the ground, irrespective of any kind of aspects of diversity, who would be interested in standing behind that goal. I do think, you know, I've been Peterborough back in the day when they had it, Brentford, like you say. I've not done it abroad yet, but I've seen games abroad where they've got it, and it certainly does help the atmosphere. It needs to be done properly, and obviously the new safe standing with the kind of screw-in seats seem to be the way to do that. It would certainly be an experiment. I think anything to improve the atmosphere would obviously be great.
I knew you'd pipe up as soon as this came. Freddie says, Phil from Eltham, you just messaging regarding safe standing, energised fans and great atmosphere, taking inspiration from Germany. You are my best friend. And I assume that Freddie thinks he's his best friend because, of course, he referred to Palace fans there. Palace fan. Garmy, our very own Mark, says, no safe standing in the lower north, please. It's the only chance I get to sit down all week. in fact, and then all these just tweets, in fact, saying there's an in-depth two-page article by the China Athletic Supporters Trust on safe standing in the Oxford programme, chaps. So I'll have to dig that out and have a look. I don't actually get a chance to read the programme because I'm normally busy on a match day, so I'll have to dig that out. Right, something else that came out of today's press day, which I thought was quite interesting to have a chat about, is Josh McGuinness. He got his first goal in, I think it was 15 appearances in all competitions on Saturday. Carl Robinson was asked about his performances recently and whether he thinks that new goal will sort of be a big lift to his confidence.
But forget to take the goal away. I think I've said to you consistently now over the last 2 weeks, he's getting better and better and better. We hit high intensity meters per minute, and Josh has been top of the physical data in training for 2 weeks. He's been, him and Ahmed Kashi have been blowing our GPS sets out of the water. No, I thought it was Ahmed Kashi's best game. Take the goal away from the two of them. Them two have been top of our physical data for the last 2 weeks. I don't know what Kashi was doing in that position, but him and Josh, I thought that's their best games of the season. I thought they were unplayable. Kashi reduced his touches. He made more forward passes. He made more interceptions. He made more challenges. He loves playing alongside Jake. He feels Jake's obviously played a number of games, and when Kashi goes, he knows he's going to have that experience to sit underneath the ball a little bit. So, and I think Josh has been outstanding all season. He's not scored enough goals. We know that. That's what he will be judged on fundamentally. But there's other elements that we have to look at these players on, and he's to go through all of the speculation on Wednesday or Thursday, to then to train the way he did last week amidst all of that, and to come up with the goal when you see the goal. When their fullback makes the mistake and Jada Silva retrieves the ball, Josh is still a good 30 metres from where he makes contact with at least six players in between him and the goal. He runs past everyone with head down, chest up, and away he went. And I'm so pleased for him. And let's just hope that's a start of many.
So interesting words from Carl Robertson there. He sort of said what I think I said on Sunday show, which is, you know, his performances recently, if you just ignore the goal he scored on Saturday, they've probably been of similar levels over the last few weeks. Like, he's working hard, getting involved, his link-up play and all that. He's just added a goal to it. All of a sudden, everyone's remembered, oh, he does other stuff as well. But it's because he scored his goal that people are now sort of lifting him up again.
Yeah, completely. And I think we've defended him a lot on this show, and we've come in for criticism for that. And, you know, ultimately he is going to be judged by his goals. But the work he's put in for the last 13, 14 games where he hasn't scored has been phenomenal. And yes, it's not enough. And Carl's admitted there, it's not enough. He needs to score goals. I don't think he was any better in terms of his performance at the weekend than he was at any other game. But he got on the end of a cross and got his goal. And yeah, he needs to build on that now. He needs to go on a little scoring run and get five or six over the next few games. If he can do that, you know, that goal drought will be quickly forgotten, particularly if we end up winning a few of those games and work our way up the table. So, yeah, I like what he gives the team. You know, I'm in agreement with everyone who says he hasn't scored enough goals, because, you know, the proof is there that that hasn't been good enough. But I do like the way he works. And at the moment, it's not like we have an alternative that we could put in there necessarily, maybe Zyro now. But yeah, I was just so pleased for him at the weekend, and like Carl, hopefully he can go on a bit of a run now.
I mean, strikers do get judged by their goals, which is of course why a lot of people have been saying what they've been saying recently. So do you think Josh has got it in him to score more goals than he has? Because if you look at last season, I think he got 10 or so, despite having injuries for a reasonable spell of it. This season, you know, at the start of the season, he was on absolute flames. He must have scored 6 or 7 goals in the first few games, along with a couple for Northern Ireland as well. So do you think that this one goal will now propel him back to that goal-scoring form that we saw early on in the season?
Well, hope so. But yeah, like we've said, we've had this conversation millions of times of what he offers and stuff. And let's not beat around the bush. He's created a lot of chances for other people who haven't taken their chances early in the season. Every week it was a case of haven't taken our chances. It's not like it's only Josh that has missed his chances. It's everyone. But yeah, I agree, he hasn't scored enough goals. And hopefully it can obviously boost him on now, and obviously try and get a couple more, because we need to get these wins and try and cement our place in the top six. So a little bit of competition now with Michael Zyro, maybe. I don't know, but yeah, hopefully it could be a start of something. So just to get his rewards, like he said, he puts all the effort in training and stuff. Just need that little bit more luck.
Right, I found the article in the programme about safe standing. Basically, is from the Trust. They said apparently they did a survey, and apparently 80% of respondents were in favour of the idea, but only 45% said they didn't feel sufficiently well informed, which is why there is a two-piece spread in the programme, which I'll make sure I read when I get home to find out a few more of the rules, and maybe we can talk about it as well on Sunday. Right, let's have a quick break, and then we'll start gearing up to look ahead to Saturday's trip up north to play Doncaster.
Jackson, it's in! Yes! Yes! Get it! Johnny Jackson! Woohoo!
Charlton Live.
Right, we had a message from the China Athletic Museum actually the other day saying there's a particular item that they're trying to get their hands on, a few more of. They're looking for half and half ski hats from the 80s. Now, it's ironic actually that everyone slags off the half and half scarves these days, but these half and half ski hats seem to be a bit of a thing back in the day. So I've seen people wearing them. It's Charlton on one side, and then you might have Rangers. They said they've got a Rangers, a Celtic and a Brazil one so far. So they're looking for anyone, if anyone else has got a spare half and half ski hat from the 80s, any type really, Charlton and anyone else, If you remember him as well. But he says, if you have any you want to donate to the museum are looking out for those. Right, Saturday, we make the longest trip up north to the Keep Moat Stadium. That's the last thing I've heard it being called. I don't know if they changed the name again. To face Doncaster Rovers, looking to get back on the winning trail after last week's disappointment at home to Oxford. Carl Robinson, of course, was previewing the game very briefly today with Tony Hard and with Clive Yorton.
We've got a very, very difficult game on Saturday against Adam. And I know his teams are very, very well prepped, very well coached. He's an honest person who knows the game inside out. And his teams are always one of the most difficult challenges that I come up against. So we'll we know we've got to be at our best. And there's no excuses whatsoever.
You go to Doncaster on Saturday, just hoping to bounce back to winning ways.
Listen, we go into every game off the back of a win to win the next. So off the back of a negative result doesn't mean we have a different next outcome. It's the same approach always. Otherwise, we don't do any. If we have different approaches to different games, from a mentality and a work ethic, it means we've done the last one of the service. So no, it's the same. Back to work as usual, and back to working hard, and back to a very difficult away game. What a difficult week. Very, very weird. Obviously, Doncaster be a difficult test, but Oxford have been dead and a manager change. We also, Doncaster, Bradford have had a manager change by probably the time we played them. MK Dons have had a manager change. Obviously, that would be a strange one for me, as it always is. But there's I think three of the four have all been the managers before we've played them. So it's not the same team, maybe, that people expect the same outcome. And that always throws, and what the difficulty that gives to us is, you just don't quite know what shape or system or style they're going to go with. So our plan and preparation becomes a little bit disjointed because of that. So we have to focus more on ourselves and the opposition.
Carl, very briefly looking ahead to the games coming up, of course, including this Saturday's game at home to Doncaster. Covered Enquirer actually sent us a DM saying, drinking game, take a shot every time, Carl Robinson says, in some ways. Which, I mean, you'd be absolutely battered very quickly.
Tough old press conference.
yeah. I don't know if we're actually allowed to drink in the press conferences. I've never tried, but I will on Saturday and get absolutely smashed every time it says in some ways. Right, big game Saturday. Mm. You're not going, Tom. Nathan, you're going. You've got a terrible excuse, Tom.
Yeah, I'm going to England Wales instead.
Yeah, that's literally not a real sport, rugby, but we'll crack on. I mean, it is a big game. I mean, obviously, after the disappointment of last week, now the disappointment of losing Steffi Mavididi, it's going to be interesting to see, A, how we line up, and B, how we react to that. I mean, because it wasn't the worst performance in the world on Saturday.
No.
I mean, it was very slack defending at the end that cost us our 3 points and then our point.
Yeah.
So how we react to that is going to be interesting.
It'll be huge. And like I said to you before we went on air, throughout the game on Saturday, I was under the assumption that we were just going to win. It's very rare that I feel so confident, but I wasn't nervous. And then got sucker punched right at the end. And yeah, I thought we were going to be coming into this on the back of four straight wins, and we haven't. But as you say, it was very bad defending, and we let ourselves down at the end. But on the whole, we should have won that game. But Doncaster, you know, I've just had a look, and they haven't won this year. They've drawn, I think, drawn five and lost two. Mm. So it's not like they're on a great run of form.
I'm glad you said that stat, because I get rinsed for saying stats. So I was going to tweet that at some point tomorrow. They haven't won all year. So
You'll get more stick than I will, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they're down there. They're mid-table as well. If we can just kind of ignore the last game and think back to the fact that on the whole we are on a good run over the last five or six games, then there's nothing to fear and we can go there and get 3 points.
I can't remember the game we played against them at the Valley, Nath. If vaguely remember it being a fairly even but not that exciting encounter. The only bit I can remember is when the referee got knocked over.
Did Josh score by header? Was it 1-0?
I think it was Fosu with the early goal.
I think it was Fosu.
It was quite cagey.
Yeah, so quite cagey. I mean, do you expect more of the same up there? I mean, in terms of team news now, so we know we're going to miss Steffi Mavididi, who's been starting the last few games. Now, which way do we go with this? So, does Sully Kaikai come straight into start? Now, bearing in mind that when he played his 20 minutes last week, he looked a little bit off it. He's had another week's worth of training now. Does that change the decision? Is there someone else waiting in the wings that you put on instead?
I think Reeves will get another go. I think he'll have Marshall and Fosu out wide, and then you'll have Reeves in the middle, I assume. I don't know, unless... I'll be surprised if he does start Zaira or Kaikai, but who knows. But I think they're a big team. I think we had... like we always do it, every team at home, you have that Marquise coming over to our fullbacks, going for the diagonal ball. So that's going to be another challenge in itself. Mm. It's going to be, they're quite an organised side, even though you said well, Tom said the stat. I won't put it on your doorstep, but he said it. About a stat. They're still, you know, they're still the home team. They're still, anything can happen. So it's going to be a tricky game. But I expect Reeves to come in.
And in terms of central defence now, because it's something we talked about. Maybe there was a lack of experience there. I mean, we might have been being harsh. We might have just been picking the easy targets because they were the central defenders. But I mean, Patrick Bauer was on the bench last week. Do you think he comes in for one of Konsa or Lennon?
I'd say for Lennon. No disrespect to Harry, but
you've just said he shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, but I think you give him a little rest or whatever you want to call it. But no, listen, I mean, Harry was out for a while and he's played quite a few games since the turn of the year. So, well, since Southend, wasn't it? So, I think it was evident we did lack that sort of that experience at the centre half, and I think I'd expect Paddy to come in and partner Rez.
Yeah.
I think Harry's done okay since he's been in, but it's not exceptional. But yeah. I think if Paddy's fit, out of all the centre half apart from Jason Pearce, you've got to play him, in my opinion.
Right, so you're going to line up a cashy back bet at some point over the next couple of days.
Yeah, because I don't know what the team's going to be. We'll do that Saturday morning or something.
So we'll do that Saturday. Yeah. We'll work out how we want to do that now. But let's have some predictions for the trip up to the Keepmoat Stadium. Tom, go first.
4-0.
4-0, which way are we going?
Nah, honestly, I missed Northampton at home, we smashed them. I missed the Warsaw game at home, we smashed them. And I'm missing this, so
4-0.
4-0,
no?
2-1. 2-1 to Charlton.
Yeah, I see 2-1, late winner from the new owner. Comes on, scores, everyone loves him. Brilliant.
Roland scores.
Get fans on side straight away.
Roland own goal is their goal. Yeah. Right, so this, I think we're just about coming up to the end of the show. Now, don't forget, we will be back on Sunday. Whether anything interesting happens between now and then, we don't know. Whether anything interesting happens in times for next week's big match preview will be interesting to see. But thank you for joining us here on Charlton Live. Don't forget the quiz tickets. Just finally, the quiz is going to be on the 26th of February. I understand the tickets are sold really well, so if you want to come to that, you need to act fast. Go onto the club website. All the money, of course, goes to Prostate Cancer UK. The quiz is going to be at the Marriott Hotel in Bexley Heath on Monday, the 26th of February. Carl Robson's going to be there if he's still our manager. Paul Heckenbottom might be there if he decides to leave Leeds and come to Charlton or something. But we'll find out. Anyway, this has been Charlton Live, the big match for you. Thank you for joining us on what could potentially be a very big day for the club. We'll be back on Sunday evening. My name's Louis Mendes. Thank you for listening. It's the final countdown. Charles alive.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.